We're going inside him. We're going outside him. Inside him, outside him. And when they get him on the run once, we're going to keep him on the run. And we're not going to pass unless our secondary comes up too close. But don't forget, man, we're going to get him on the run. We're going to go, 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 go. And we aren't going to stop until we go to our goal line. Don't forget, man, today, we're going to win.
And it's a fake. The throw is demanding. He bobbles it. And then it hits to the end zone. Touchdown.
Let's just go. He's got three people down there. The ball's up in the air. Caught. Touchdown. 4th and 5. The national championship on the line right here. He's going for the corner.
Live at the Gups Corner Podcast Network. Thanks for tuning in. My name is Bobby Berger, former Notre Dame football player, now self-proclaimed college football aficionado. The goal, I'm sure you're tired of hearing this, but it's to be the best college football podcast. If you're wondering how I'm doing, just coming back from a work trip, Minneapolis. Pretty nice little city, if we're being honest. It was very clean. Yeah, really enjoyed myself, and it was actually nice to have a 60-degree day up there. Used to this 70, 80s, 90s, which I love. But that 60-degree fall crispness really makes you feel like you're in football season, so I enjoyed that. Hope you all are doing well yourselves. Let's get into it. Trivia question. So in the past three seasons, that's 2020, 21, 22, the Georgia Bulldogs – have only lost to one team other than Alabama. So in the last 3 years, Alabama's beat them a few times. Who is the one team to beat them that's not named Alabama? Think about it. Roll the music. All right, that one team is your Florida Gators in 2020. Florida got beat 44-28. Kyle Pitts was a tight end. Kadarius Toney was a wide receiver. However, Florida somehow threw for 474 yards with Kyle Trask, and I think 200 of those yards were to running backs, believe it or not. So Florida is the answer there, and shout out to Georgia. They are rocking and rolling. Let's get into it. Slate breakdown.
Wrong side!
Left side!
All right, first one is Missouri at Auburn. Auburn is a 7-point favorite. Over under is 51.5. Missouri's coming off an Abilene Christian glorified walkthrough. Good for them. Brady Cook's the quarterback at Missouri. He's okay. He's all right. Runs a little bit, so maybe in DFS. Interesting with Missouri, so they have this 5-star receiver, Luther Burden. Consensus, like top 5 overall player in – it's kind of a shocker when he went to Missouri. And so it's kind of interesting to see how those top prospects do. And I think the jury's still out on Burden. He's clearly talented. And Missouri does ways to try to get the ball in his hands, whether it's jet sweep or whether it's wildcat. I just don't think he's very polished running routes at all. And he has a lot of development to do when it comes to the quirkiness and the inside outs of routes. And you could say, well, Burden doesn't have a great quarterback in Brady Cook. Well, the other wide receiver on his team, Dominic Lovett, is doing really well and absolutely the number one wide receiver on the team. So you can't use that excuse with him. But I hope he does well because I want to see more 5-stars go to schools other than Alabama, Clemson, Georgia, Ohio State. So it's interesting to check in on them. Auburn, coming off a tough one last week, got their butts kicked by Penn State. Shout out to Penn State. They played really well. TJ Finley, he isn't that good. There's talks of him getting – I think he's hurt, and they're going to roll with the backup. So a little bit of an open guesswork to know what he has, and for that reason I'm staying away from the game. I need to dive deeper into him. Tank Bigsby, you kind of feel for him. He's a really good running back. It's just Auburn just not opening up holes. The scheme's not good enough. They're not competing. That wasn't a very good performance against Penn State at home. Let's put it that way. Interestingly, last year, Missouri was garbage against the run. And this year, they're actually pretty good against the run. So something to monitor as the year goes on for matchups, but because Auburn might be starting a backup quarterback, don't know too much about him, going to research him more, I'm going to stay away from this game. Next one, Florida at Tennessee. Tennessee's a 10.5-point favorite, over under 62.5. College game day is coming. It is big time. I mean big time for Knoxville. They're dying for a winner down there. Florida really hasn't been that impressive, actually, if you look at them. Utah's shown some holes since Florida played them. We all thought Utah was really good, and I still think Utah is solid. But then Florida, after the Utah game, you know, they go out, and they're really lucky to beat South Florida last week. And then they lose to Kentucky, and Richardson doesn't throw over anything. So I really haven't been super impressed by them. But also, Tennessee played Pittsburgh pretty tight. Not sure Pittsburgh that is that good. So I don't really feel confident one way or the other here. I think it's a pretty decent line. As we know with Florida, it's Anthony Richardson or bust. They're going to run a really slow pace, which also makes me want to stay away from a 10-point favorite. And then you have Hendon Hooker on the other side for Tennessee. So if you like dual-threat running quarterbacks, this is the game for you, for sure. Jalen Wright might be the only healthy back for Tennessee, something to watch. And then Cedric Tillman's banged up. I know Tennessee waxed Akron, but it sounds like they weren't too happy about it. It sounds like they got a couple injuries, and maybe Akron is playing a little bit dirty. Not good to see, not good to see at all. So hopefully those guys are able to go. For Tennessee, but that's also something to monitor, and another reason why I wouldn't back Tennessee. And I think I just gave you all the reasons why I wouldn't back the Florida Gators this week, even though they were the answer to the trivia question. Oregon at Washington State. Oregon -6.5. Over under is 57.5. Give me Oregon. They actually had a pretty good success rate against Georgia. I know the scoreboard looked bad. I am not in love with Washington State. The way to beat Oregon is throwing the ball through the air with accuracy and maybe taking some shots downfield with multiple playmakers. And I'm not sure that's Cameron Ward's mojo. I'm really not. I think that's a bad matchup for Washington State. I know they throw the ball a lot, but we're sitting at 64th in passing success rate against a schedule that's not that great. So that is concerning going against like team like Oregon, where the way to beat them is through the air. I mean, Washington State's played Idaho, Colorado State, and Wisconsin. Sure, Wisconsin's decent, but they actually should have lost that game if you look at the advanced box score. So I think that's also propping up the line on this one. Give me Oregon, -6.5. I think the coach says this is you wake up, eat eggs, and kick ass or something like that. That was awesome. I just think they're a much better team, the Washington State. Hopefully we get good Bo Nix, who is playable in DFS. Running backs, wide receivers, massive rotation in Oregon. But I think those – what's weird is the teams that do these massive rotations, thinking of Billy Napier when he was at Louisiana. He's at Florida. He does that now. And then Oregon, they rotate the running backs, rotate the wide receivers. Some of those teams can really gel if you do it the right way. You can really get everyone to buy into the program. It is an issue when you play better teams and you need one stud to do well. But if you can pull it off where every guy plays, everyone feels involved, I think it creates more buy-in from everyone throughout the program. Washington State, not that interested. Maybe Donovan Ollie. He's one of their best guys wide receiver-wise. So give me Oregon, -6.5. We will lock that in for the first official pick of the week. And speaking of picks, I'm 8-9 the year. Doc is 10-6. Got some work to do to catch up to him. Let's get into the big horse of the week. All right, big horse of the week, the Oregon Ducks. Just talked about it. 41-20 against BYU. BYU, obviously, probably a tough game for them to come. Going on the road after an overtime home win, big-time thriller against Baylor. However, Oregon waxes them 6.9 to 5.6 per play, way worse in the first half. And Bo Nix goes 14-20 for 227. And that's 12 yards an attempt. I always like to look at yards per pass. I think that's a way better stat than just looking at overall yards. So 12 yards per attempt, two touchdowns. Bo Nix was awesome running the ball. Shout out to the Oregon Ducks bouncing back. I mean, you lose, get your ass kicked to Georgia, you could just fold it up easy and just have a whatever year. But they rallied, they, you know, and then they come out against a good, solid BYU team and straight up dominate the whole time. So, Oregon, congratulations. You are big horse of the week. Another candidate that could have been our big horse of the week is Kansas. Duke, too. Duke at Kansas next game. Kansas minus 7, over under 65. Just like we all thought. We all thought the winner of the Duke and Kansas would both be undefeated, and the winner of the game would be 4-0. So much for these guys being basketball schools. Maybe they're football schools. Anyways, this game is actually surprisingly a slower pace than a lot of people think. Kansas is pretty slow. They've just been super efficient. Duke is also really slow themselves. So I'm going to take the under 65 as a pick here. You really haven't had a ton of success with overrunners, so take it as you want it there. But I'm betting on Kansas's offensive efficiency going down. Also, Duke's offensive efficiency has been okay. I'm a bet on that going down too. You look at it. Duke is really slow. Kansas is really slow, and both teams love to run the football. I mean, 65 seems like a lot of points for two teams like they are, even though their defenses really aren't great. Let's see here. And they're both really, really good at stopping explosive plays too. So that tells me they're going to be a bunch of like 5-yard carries, which is like churn that clock. So that's my pick there, under 65. Riley Leonard's interesting quarterback for Duke. He's okay. He's solid. Guy I like for Duke is Jalen Calhoun. He's a good player. Jordan Moore, he's decent himself. And then the Kansas side, it's Jalen Daniels or bust. It's much like Oregon. You can almost think of Bo Nix and Jalen Daniels as similar players. Because they basically are the offense. They're going to run a ton. They're not trying to throw the ball a lot. When they do throw the ball, they're going to throw the ball to a receiver that may not be in the game for the next two plays. That's just what you're going to get for this Kansas team. And we can't say anything about that approach because it's very much working for them. Next one, TCU at SMU. TCU minus 2, over under is 70. That is a 7-0 in a close game. I expect this game to be really popular for DFS purposes. And, I mean, we can see why. TCU is playing slow, but they really haven't needed to play fast. SMU is playing lightning fast pace. I've been snapping the ball at the third fastest rate. Does include garbage time, but interesting. Third fastest rate. They can move. So you're going to see a lot of plays in this game. SMU likes to pass the ball a lot, too. So it's one of those things if Texas Christian gets up early, put it this way, if SMU gets up early, this will be an absolute track meet because it'll force TCU to play faster and throw the ball more. Something to monitor there. TCU's pretty good start offensively, even though they played two terrible teams. So it's kind of hard to see what we got here. I know they had some quarterback injuries, so something to watch there is who the starting quarterback is this week. Quentin Johnson, he was awesome wide receiver this year. But this is an entirely, totally different coaching staff. And he just hasn't been featured. And that's just, well, is that the game flow that they've had? Or is it a new system? So it's something to monitor there. SMU, I love this OC for SMU. I think he's really good. OC, head coach combination. Matchup's tough. TCU's slow. They're going to run the ball a lot. SMU also had 82 plays last week. That's something to look at in DFS when you're looking at counting stats like targets and carries. How many total plays did that offense run last week? SMU ran 82 plays. 82. I guarantee there's other teams that ran 50 plays. I know there's one that ran 50 plays. It's going to be in the anatomy of an upset. But 82 is a ton of plays. So take for a grain of salt those targets and carries. And that's why we like to look at percent of carries or percent of target share. Because target share, if you're not throwing it a ton, if you're not playing a ton of plays, it's not going to mean that much. But if you are in a game script where you are going to have a couple bunch of plays playing a really fast team, target share is going to be even more important. And that's when we can extrapolate out a guy who may usually get five, seven targets. Now he plays a team where he's going to get a lot of plays. He's going to get 8 to 10 targets. All of a sudden, he's very playable. A little bit of rambling there. But anyways, Speaking of a high target share, Rashee Rice has 39% target share for SMU. That is absurd. That is stupid, especially considering how much SMU passes. That's awesome. Interested in him. Tanner Mordecai, absolutely great for fantasy. Wish he ran a little bit more, but obviously he's solid. Jake Bailey, he's good. Trey Siggers in the passing game, fine. There's targets all over this game. There's going to be points scored. I think 70 is a little high for the game personally. I'm half tempted to take the under. I'll stay away here. Maybe something weird kind of happens in this game. If SMU gets up early and TCU's forced to play fast, something weird could happen. All right, Texas at Texas Tech. Texas is a 7-point favorite. Over-under is 61. It was under 7 earlier this week. It's where I got it, but we're going to go with Texas minus 7 for, you know, like the pod. We always use the line at time of recording. Give me Texas minus 7. A couple reasons. So Texas Tech has the air raid offense. Donovan Smith, the quarterback, he was the backup to start the year. Tyler Shough got hurt. He's almost a better rushing quarterback. I'm not sure it's the best system for him because I don't think he's that accurate. And when you're not that accurate in this system where completing just that 4 to 5 yard pass to make it third and six, third and five, versus if you throw it in the dirt, you're third and 10, that makes the biggest difference in the world. And I'm not sure Donovan Smith can do that consistently. Also, this Texas defense coordinator was at Washington. He played Washington State. Washington used to wax Washington State. They just always had their number. So because of those reasons, I'm taking Texas minus 7. Texas, I don't really care if Quinn Ewers is the quarterback or Hudson Card. I think they're both solid. They can beat you running the ball with Bijan Robinson, always a play, or throwing the ball with Xavier Worthy. He's one of the best receivers in the country. And Jordan Whittington. And I was really curious to see how Texas would respond last week against UTSA coming off that Alabama heartbreaking loss. You look at a team like Notre Dame, they let Ohio State beat them twice. Now, Notre Dame's not really good at all, too. That also is a big part of it. But Texas, against a solid UTSA team, who you know is circling that game, they came out, they handled their business, they played well. So I really like to see that bounce back. And now this is a start of Big 10 play, a Big 12 play. Give me Texas minus 7, lock it in. All right, big dummy of the week.
A lot of miscommunication there, and that one doesn't feel good, and it's embarrassing.
All right, big dummy of the week. If you guys watch this game, South Alabama, I'm not referencing how they played the entire game because they had so much higher success rate than UCLA, and they should have won. They played great. However, I am the big dummy of the week goes to the South Alabama decision they made with 2 minutes and 50 seconds left to go in the game. South Alabama's up 31-29. They're driving the ball down the field. It is 4th and 2 on about the 30-yard line going into UCLA. South Alabama decides to line up for a field goal. They then motion out to a basically spread formation, and they have the holder getting the snap and throwing the ball. So they didn't even – it's a fake field goal they run. And it wasn't even like they pretended like they were trying to kick at any point. They knew they were faking the entire time, which was the biggest problem in this operation. So you have a lot of different options here. You kick the ball to go up 34-29. So you're up 5 points. So UCLA has to score a touchdown with 2 minutes left or you win. You could go for it on 4th and 2. You had been churning out success rate all game. You could go for it in 4th and 2, not with your holder as the actual quarterback, but your actual quarterback, Carter Bradley, as the quarterback, and go for it there. Or you could attempt a field goal that the opposing team actually thinks you're going to kick the field goal. So it was just an absolute big dummy of the week move, and it was just a landslide decision to South Alabama. If you haven't seen it, YouTube it. Man, just an absolute crusher for them. All right, let's roll on. Baylor at Iowa State. Iowa State minus 2.5. Over-under is 45.5. Baylor's played some pretty close games. So it's always nice with these teams that played close games. We get a really idea of their usage. Who's going to be on the field? How much are they going to be on the field? And who are you trying to target? Who's getting those carries? Blake Shapen's a quarterback. Yeah, okay. It's worth noting the pace of this game is slow as molasses. Iowa State does not move fast. Baylor at times can get real slow, also because they run the ball a fair amount. Running back rotation for Baylor, it's been crazy. They spread around an offense. Their offense, Baylor is a good team because of their defense, not because of their offense. So it's really hard to play a guy from Baylor. Iowa State, Hunter Decker's the quarterback. He's okay. But then you have Xavier Henderson. That's a big story with Iowa State. He is a 36% target share. That's a so it means out of one of every three, he's getting more than one every three out of every three passes that come out of Iowa State quarterback's hands are going to Xavier Hutchinson. That's an absurd rate. Absolutely absurd rate. So he'd be an interest there. As far as the line, Iowa State minus 2.5 over 45.5. You know, it just feels like this is a game that's going to be a little slow. It's going to kind of muddy it up, and it's a game that's going to come down to, like, the final drive. And does a guy make a field goal or not? It just feels like one of those games. So because of that, I'm going to stay away. Next one, Notre Dame at UNC. Notre Dame is struggling on offense, and that is a capital STRUGGLES. You know, we're going to need Drew Pine to throw the ball. I think his average depth of target, this is crazy. His average depth of target was like minus 0.5 yards. Minus 0.5 yards against Cal last week. That's how many screens they threw, how many short passes they threw. I think he basically attempted one pass further than 10 yards. He literally cannot throw the ball like 30 yards. This is the starting quarterback of one of the most winningest programs in the history of college football. He can barely throw the ball 30 yards. And as crazy as it sounds, I think Notre Dame's offense is better with him because he's making better decisions. And it's forcing Tommy to get a little more creative than just say, hey, we're going to run our quarterback because he's athletic, which is where Buckner was. So I think the beneficiaries to the new Notre Dame offense are the running backs, as they're going to do everything to get the ball in his hands. They're going to run the ball a lot more. That would be Audric Estime and Chris Tyree. Diggs wasn't involved in the game last week, which really helped Estime and Tyree. I think they have a pretty good game this week. I mean, because as bad as Notre Dame's offense has been, you'd have a hell of a debate debating is Notre Dame's offense worse or is UNC's defense worse? I mean, that is one hell of a debate because they are both abysmal. And then the flip side, you have UNC's offense is really good. And Notre Dame's pass defense is excellent. The run defense could be better, but I think a lot of that run defense being bad is how good their pass defense has been. So it's an intriguing matchup for sure. Obviously, you got Michael Mayer, tight end. He's the dude pass catching. Obviously interested in him. UNC, I think what could hurt Notre Dame is Drake May running the football. That's interesting. Notre Dame came out in a press conference and basically said, we're going to try to stop Josh Downs. He had a big game against Notre Dame last year and Downs is back. So I think they really try to stick on him and make a game plan to not let him beat him. I think the guy to play for UNC would be Amarian Hampton, as Notre Dame has struggled a little bit in the games of the run at times this year. Yeah, they played a good team in Ohio State, but Notre Dame is 120th in success rate against the run. That is bad, really bad. So that's something to monitor here. Both the running backs in this game. As far as the line, UNC minus 2, over 155.5. I'm not going to touch this with a 10-foot pole. I just don't know what's coming. I don't have a really good feel for this Notre Dame team. And then UNC's defense has been so bad, Notre Dame's offense might look really good this week. So I'll pass. All right, anatomy of an upset. All right, anatomy of an upset. This is a fun one. Holy cow. Bowling Green 34, Marshall 31. Speaking of making Notre Dame look bad, the optics here look terrible. Marshall has 8 yards per play. Bowling Green has 5 yards per play. That is absurd. So how did Bowling Green win? First off, slow pace. There were 50 plays run by one team, 53 plays run by the other team. Shorten the game. You know, less variance when you have less plays. Marshall has two turnovers. Bowling Green doesn't turn it over at all. Marshall proceeds to go 1-3 in the red zone. They go 0-1 in fourth down. Bowling Green's 2-2 in fourth down. And Bowling Green only had three penalties. So the final yardage was 424 to Marshall, 250 for Bowling Green, and Bowling Green freaking wins the game. There you have it, anatomy of an upset. All right, rolling to the next game, Minnesota at Michigan State. Minnesota is a -2.5-point favorite. Over-under is 50. Give me Michigan State Sparties in this game. I think this is just a great matchup for how Michigan State plays football. Michigan State is going to do everything in their possible mind to stop the run, and yet they are freaking terrible. I mean terrible against the pass, but Minnesota just lost their best wide receiver for the year, and they're not going to scare you with the pass. Also, Minnesota has played three, I mean, dreadful teams. Colorado, dreadful, couldn't stop the run. Terrible matchup for them. I think we bet Minnesota that week. New Mexico State, hot garbage. Just not a good football team. And I can't forget who the third game is, but I know it wasn't a good team. So I think Minnesota's getting a little hyped up here. I know Michigan State is more talented. As long as we get an average game from Peyton Thorne and he doesn't make mistakes, I think you could beat Michigan State or beat Minnesota throwing the football. I really think you can. And it's not like they're an elite run-stopping unit. Michigan State is number two in success rate against the run. Yes, they got their ass kicked by Washington, but that's because Michael Penix and company lit him up through the air, and Penix is a very underrated quarterback, at least in my eyes. Give me Michigan State +2.5. And if you're doing a parlay, I wouldn't mind it just winning straight up through a little action on that. And this is purely a matchup play for me. DFS, yeah, it's Ibrahim for Minnesota. As good as Michigan State is running the ball or stopping the run, if Ibrahim averages 3 yards a pop and gets 35 carries, he's over 100 yards. If he gets two touchdowns, next thing you know, you're looking at 10, 22, 25 points. I mean, he's going to get 30 to 35 carries in this game. So you got to consider that. Michigan State, Peyton Thorne, don't know what to expect. Keon Coleman is a really good wide receiver. He's good. And it would really help Michigan State if Jaden Reed comes back to this game. And it sounds like he will, which also makes me a little more confident in Michigan State. So Peyton Thorne, please don't make a mistake. Please don't throw an interception. Your defense is going to stop them. Just get the ball to these athletic receivers. Let them go. Michigan State +2.5. Lock it in. Maryland at Michigan. Michigan's a 17-point favorite. Over-under is 64.5. Michigan's another team has played three abysmal teams. I mean, I think they had UConn, Hawaii, maybe Colorado State. I mean, these are three of the worst teams in Division I. They would have a tougher opponent if they played an FCS school. Not even kidding. I mean, those are three terrible teams. However, they did do what they needed to do against those teams, and they looked really good doing it. So, yes, we're not going to play anyone from Maryland and DFS. Michigan, fire up running backs, Blake Corum, C.J. Stokes, Donovan Edwards could miss again, which he missed last game due to injury. He had something to watch. It's a key one for us. And then J.J. McCarthy, he could run a few in here. This is a sneaky, really good spot for Michigan. The problem is that the pace of this game should be pretty slow. That is going to hurt in this game. But, and actually I misspoke before. Michigan State is 21 in success rate against the run. I was looking at Michigan being second in success rate actually running the football. So, however, Michigan State is only giving up 2.7 per carry. We got to like that. All right, back to Maryland, Michigan. My lean would be Michigan. I should take Michigan. I don't know why I'm not taking Michigan. Sorry, I was looking at a couple things here, a couple stats. I'm going to stay away from that game just because something's like in my gut telling me to stay away. I don't like usually listen to my gut, but I'm going to stay away from that game. Coach of the week.
Thing to do in to punch him, in to talk to him. There's only one way you get respect, and that's by looking somebody in the eye for 60 minutes. Go out there, hitch up your trousers, and say, hey, baby, here I am now.
All right, Coach of the Week is Lance Leipold. From Kansas. Squad's 3-0 at freaking Kansas. I mean, Les Miles left him with freaking nothing. Lance has been a winner everywhere he's been, which, again, I mean, winning's contagious. The more guys, the more coaches that can get hired that have won wherever they've been, whether it's, you know, high school, whether it's – well, high school's kind of tough because you usually have more talent. But it's like lower-level college football. I love to see winners there. I love to see winners at, like, MAC schools and things like that, which he did at Buffalo. He won at Wisconsin-Whitewater before that consistently. I mean, his head coaching record is 151-49. That's pretty good. And now he's doing well at Kansas, turning that program around. Hell, he beat Texas last year. And he is picking up the pieces from where Les Miles left the program, which was a terrible hire. So, Lance, you are our Coach of the Week. All right, Central Michigan at Penn State. Don't have a line for this one. Let me look it up real quick. The Nittany Lions are coming off a massive win against Auburn. I'm sure they circled that game. I got the line at 28. Over-under is 63. 63 for that one. Central Michigan, one of the better MAC teams, actually. They played they have a running back named Lou Nichols, who's basically the Muhammad Ibrahim of MAC football, except he catches passes too. I mean, this guy is the offense for them. It's what they're trying to do is get the ball in his hands. Tough news for Central Michigan is Penn State's been pretty good against the run, and they're only allowing 97 yards per game, and they've played some pretty good teams so far. And I should say better teams in Central Michigan and Purdue and Auburn. I think 28 is a decent line. I would probably lean Central Michigan just because I feel like that's a lot for Penn State coming off of an emotional win. And at any point, Sean Clifford can give some points to the other team. DFS-wise, talk a little bit about Central Michigan. One-man team, basically. They also, Carlos Carrier, their wide receiver, he missed last game due to injury, so you got to watch that. I'm not sure why he missed. I got any research there. Joel Wilson's a tight end. He's decent. And then for Penn State, I mean, I feel like we've covered him every slate so far. It's Sean Clifford a bust. Interestingly, the running back, they have a couple of running backs. They're both freshmen. This Singleton guy, like, he's not getting very many carries, but he is producing freaking week in and week out. I think Penn State, you know, they're known for the running backs. They have a nice little run of running backs. These two guys are really good. They're talented and they're solid. Penn State's not as talented at the wide receiver position. They got Tinsley, the transfer from Western Kentucky. He's okay. Not fantastic. But this is a big line. Central Michigan's defense leaves a little bit more to be desired. Also, Central Michigan plays really fast, which is really going to help Penn State. And Central Michigan has been torched through the air. So this should be a Mitchell Tinsley game. It should be a Sean Clifford game. But as always, you play Clifford at your own risk. Indiana at Cincinnati. Cincinnati's a 17-point favorite. Over-under is 57.5. Line feels like a lot, but when Indiana is literally playing – it shocked me. Indiana is playing faster than any team in the country. If you take all the plays and then you divide it by the – you divide plays by time of possession or time of possession by the plays, Indiana is number one in the country. They're getting plays off at the quickest rate in the country, which is a complete shocker. I actually rechecked my math to make sure that was right, but turns out it's correct, and Indiana is the fastest team in the country. Go figure. I think this is a pretty bad matchup for what Indiana is trying to do. This game, Cincinnati is also playing fast, and they're also throwing the ball a ton. So I think this game could potentially shoot out. I really do. This is a great game for DFS. I know Cincinnati's defense is good, but there's just going to be so many freaking plays in this game, so many passes that the clock's just not going to move. And it's a great opportunity for DFS. Again, Cincinnati, I like the slot receivers. Always have. It's the way they play. In Cincinnati, we might have to play some of Scott, the wide receiver, or we could just play quarterback, we can just basically play him naked. That's Ben Bryant. I think for sure he's going to throw over 300 yards against Indiana. Indiana's been less than impressive against the pass. They're giving up 280 a pop. I mean, hell, they're giving up almost 500 yards of offense a game, and they're 105th in success rate against the pass. So we like Cincinnati pass catchers this week. Just have to dive a little bit more into usage because they really like to spread the ball around. So I actually think you play Bryant by himself. All right, last one. Clemson, I think this is game of the week. Clemson at Wake Forest. Clemson's -7. Over-under is 55.5. Clemson has not been as good on defense this year. Will Venables is gone. He left. I mean, their numbers are really good. They got some freaking studs up front, but this will be a really good test, a litmus test to see where they stand. Now, I know on the other side, like, Wake Forest isn't clicking on all levels yet. I mean, they should have lost to Liberty. They really should have. If you look at the box score, they should have lost. But Sam Hartman, you feel like it's kind of tough to play him against Clemson. As he could take sacks, and that slow mesh might not work too well when some of these Clemson animals in the D-line are right in your face. But if he gets the ball off, A.T. Perry is really good. Donovan Green's really good. And you got Taylor Moore in the slot. I mean, Wake Forest has pretty good wide receivers, and they have a phenomenal offensive system. Clemson, I'm telling you, as terrible as it sounds, DJ Uiagalelei has upside. If he runs two in, which he's very capable of doing, he has upside. Best position on paper is the Clemson running back, which has weirdly shown a lot of rotation. Shipley isn't getting workload status like some of us perhaps thought he would. So I do not have a lean on this game. I want to take Wake, but my head's telling me, you know what? Let's see what we got in this game. All right, let's wrap it up here. The bets. We got Doc. He has 6 of them today. A lot of games we didn't cover. So he has Toledo -3 versus San Diego State. Texas -7 versus Texas Tech. UCF. Just going to keep picking on Georgia Tech. -20.5 against Georgia Tech. NIU, Northern Illinois, +26.5 versus Kentucky. Another slow-paced game, by the way. Ohio State -19 versus Wisconsin. And Arkansas +2 versus A&M. And I have five. Let's run through Doc's picks one more time. Toledo -3, Texas -7, UCF -20.5, NIU +26.5, OSU -19, Arkansas +2. I have 5 today. I have Oregon -6.5 to beat Washington State. I have the under 65. That would be in the Duke-Kansas game. And then I have Texas -7 against Texas Tech. And then Michigan State, I like them +2.5 against Minnesota. It's a matchup play. You know what? Give me Ohio State -19 versus Wisconsin. This Ohio State defense is approved. They're letting up a little explosiveness against the run, the pass, but I think over time that's kind of going to even itself out. They're doing really well in success rate this year on defense, and I think you'll see Ohio State's defense just get better and better. And then the flip side, I mean, Ohio State's just going to absolutely throttle Wisconsin on offense. Now that they have Jackson Smith healthier, there's just no chance of slowing them down. On the year, 8-9 for me. Doc is 10-6. Let's roll into the words. Wisdom. Words of wisdom. You got to find out what kind of player you are in the daily fantasy world. Are you a guy who does better on the big 12 game slates? Are you a guy who does better on the 3 or 4 games? Are you a guy that does better on the 8 games? And there's different strategies in every single one. But luckily for us, we have different options throughout the week. Usually Thursday and Friday, 3 games. You have the night slate Saturday night. It's usually an 8 to 10 game range. And then the main slate Saturdays are 13 games. So my suggestion would be, you know, think about some of your big wins. Think about how you prefer to play. Think about how much you play and ask yourself, which one's best for me? How can I make my mark in tournaments? Which ones have I been successful at in the past? And maybe go a little heavier on those kind of games and dial back the other ones. So something to think about is do a little self-reflection. Really think to yourself, how many games per slate is my honey hole, is my sweet spot? And I think that'll help you be a better DFS player. All right. Thanks for tuning in this week. Hope you guys enjoyed the show. Hear it everywhere. Rating reviews, great. All feedback is good. These are also very initial thoughts. And so you can always find the detailed breakdowns at cupscorner.com. More Friday and Saturday action up on the website. Until next time, make some memories.